Hello, I'm Greg Livingston, and I am here with Rick Kelly to talk about his game Heroes Guard: The Journal. Rick, for anyone who's not familiar with the game, would you be able to give us a quick gist of what it's about?
Sure. So it's sort of like those books from the 80s. They were called Choose Your Own Adventure books. So for the most part, you're choosing your way through a story, but there are some role-playing elements as well. So you'll have a character sheet, and sometimes there's dice rolls involved with certain choices you make. But then the other thing that kind of really mixes it up is the combat portion. And so the combat portion is actually a card game you play, because as you read through the story, you're actually kind of building up your deck, because the magic that you learn, the weapons you pick up, and companions you meet all become cards in your deck to be used in combat. So it's sort of a mashup of a couple of different things: the Choose Your Adventure books, the tabletop role playing, and sort of a deck builder.
Yeah. Honestly, going into it, I kind of expected that it would just be a card game with a story tacked onto it, but it's actually, they're much more integrated into each other than I would have expected.
Oh yeah, thanks. It actually started off as solely Choose Your Own Adventure story based, and then later on, with a much more simplified combat portion. But I wanted a little more strategy to the combat, I guess. And I've always been a fan of deck builders and card games, and so that actually came second. So that's partly why the story feels a little stronger versus being tacked on like some games.
That's kind of funny. I guess I experienced it backwards, where I forget who it was. I think it was your brother demoed the card game with me at Gamescape, and so I got to play with the physical, nicely printed cards, and so I went into it purely as a card game.
Yeah, the card game, the physical version, actually just started off as just a way to get people to come to convention tables, because if folks see you kind of like playing cards or rolling dice, they kind of wander over like, hey, what is this thing, right? And then you can kind of show people the digital game. But folks have really enjoyed just the physical version of the game, so I've been slowly iterating it and making it more standalone and more complete over time.
Nice. So the story gives players choices for how to solve problems, and some of these choices add to the player's skills, like you can add strength or charisma based on how you solve a problem. And some RPGs, like I was just playing Fallout, and when you boot up Fallout for the first time, you just click some notches and you set your charisma that way. But in Heroes Guard, there's no explicit way to set your skills, and instead you're playing through a story and gaining skills through these choices. So I wanted to compare those two examples and ask you what the story adds to that skill-building process.
I think for me, it was just giving the player a chance to really kind of get into their character and develop them more, feel like they're more a part of it. Because all the stat points you're collecting, the whole time you're talking about your character's backstory. The intention was it helps to paint a more full picture of your character, but also helps you to visualize this world, right? Because as you're reading books, it's all about your imagination. And so it's just those little tidbits that hopefully help to set the stage for your imagination, I guess. But and then, of course, tie into game mechanics, because it's all about making it a game and making it fun.
Right. So that when your character has 4 strength, you know why your character has 4 strength.
Yes, yep.
Okay. And some of those choices will test player skills, like you'll have to roll a die, and it'll test your intelligence level, and it'll add them together and see if you pass whatever test. And I wanted to ask how you balance those tests, like how do you know how hard to make it?
So that was very tricky. I guess it was very many play tests. So I've been to probably 6 or 7 conventions now. Those are probably among the best, is watching folks play and see how they struggle. Another one is beta tests online, and I collect analytics from folks playing as well, so I can kind of see how often they're failing something or how often they're choosing a certain choice. And so that helps a little bit to see those actual raw numbers, but I think the best was always watching folks at conventions and just seeing their frustration and excitement levels, just kind of making sure that that pacing is good. Because if I see someone fail story after story, or they get all their gold stolen in a story, I pull those back a little bit.
But I imagine you want some rate of failure, right? Like if I have 0 intelligence and I take on the intelligence challenge anyway, like would you agree that the player should probably most of the time fail in that case?
Absolutely, and I think that's part of what makes playing the games so fun again. You kind of learn a little more about the world and the choices you're going to come across, and you're like, oh, okay, well, maybe I shouldn't go fight this demon overlord because he's really high intelligence. Maybe I should try to avoid that event that pops up. Or maybe I should explore a character backstory that kind of helps me build up that more intelligence. And so, and yeah, that's definitely the gaming and mechanic portion, that they have to choose the choices that sort of make sense for their character. Or they take a gamble, because it's all on the dice roll as well. So
yeah. So you kind of talked there about how you might be able to reason out, you know, when you would want to test your intelligence or your strength or what have you. And it's worth noting that because none of the skill tests are explicitly labeled, it's almost a test of reading comprehension, where you'll have to read the story, look at the text, and say, what is this actually asking me in terms of my character skills? Was your intention there for it to be a test of the player's reasoning, or were you trying to make it as transparent as possible without being explicit?
So that was definitely on purpose. The intention was to be a game within a game, I guess you would say. Because you're going to know your stats before you start doing a lot of these stories, and you're probably going to want to always try to choose the highest stat skill to get past if you're like a min-max kind of player. But I think, as you said, reading comprehension-wise definitely plays a part, but you never totally know 100% like what choice is going to test. I hope most of the time it kind of makes sense, especially after you choose the choice. It kind of goes through, like, it continues the story, right, and provides more context as to why your dexterity was tested or why your strength was tested. So I definitely throw the player for a few loops sometimes. And that's also on purpose too. But it can be frustrating, so I don't do that a whole lot, because part of it too is the player also has to get into the mind of the writer. Like, ooh, what was the writer thinking here, right? What is their intention? But, you know, again, it's like once they've played through it, they've seen like maybe some how the tests go, they can kind of they've become a little more experienced. It's like, okay, next time, you know, I'm going to be more prepared for that.
Yeah, there was a certain point early on in the story where I was trying to slip past some guard, and I just did whatever because I didn't quite know what I was getting into, and then I failed. And since you open up the chance for players to fail these tests, how do you keep the story moving in the face of that?
I guess that was tricky. It depends, I guess, which phase of the game you're in, because you can never really lose the game early. So if you ever read those Choose Your Adventure books, you could like lose like on your first choice or your second choice. They were kind of ridiculous. And so what ended up happening was a lot of people would kind of cheat because you kind of want to, you know, continue the story through. So what I wanted this game to be about is more about how well you did at the end, right? And so if you're on the map that has like random events that pop up, you know, you can fail those events and those towns can kind of be taken over. But if you save them, then you get like little trophies, and that helps your end score. You know, you might earn some gold as well. And sometimes if you're in like the main arc of the story, which is like one of the last stories you do, that could make the main boss easier or harder, depending on whether or not you make choices successfully. So I guess the end all be all is like the more successful you are about and strategic you are about choosing your choices will kind of make the game itself a little easier, but also give you a better score as well. So it's I guess that was kind of the main gist. It's all about, I guess, how well you did at the end.
Okay, so you give some leniency just to get through it, but there is a sense of accountability and maybe replayability there where the player would want to play through again and reach a higher skill level.
Yeah, there's definitely a score that you get, and there's a high score wall, and you also get a little conclusion story at the end for your character, like how did they transpire, like what happened to them once your journal is complete. So, of course, the better you did in the game, the better your conclusion story could be as well. So that's interesting, too, to kind of play through a couple different ways to, you know, whether or not you're a beggar on the street or, you know, you're a ruler of the land or what have you.
Pretty big gap there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely have some friends who, if they got their hands on this game, would probably try to find every ending. All right. And moving on to combat, the combat of Heroes Guard, as you mentioned, was this card game, and you're almost fighting against a dungeon master who controls an enemy who has similar abilities to yours. And in combat, your abilities are influenced by your skill set, like how much strength and intelligence you have, and also by the element you have, whether it's ice or fire or what have you. And there's a lot of different ways to build a character. You can have a character that's all strength, or you can have a character that's pretty balanced. And no matter what build you have, you can choose any of the four elements. Were you looking for combat that would sustain any build, or are you looking for combat that would more draw out intelligent choices and, would reward a player that finds, oh, this element is complementary with this skill, so I'll pursue that?
I was definitely looking for strategy. So my background is, I was a big Magic the Gathering player, and I love some of the deep complexity of some of the, like, the weird combinations you can pull off. But that game gets pretty deep. It can get pretty heavy. So I wanted some strategy, but I didn't want the strategy to be so deep that, not anybody can really get into it. Because what the game really comes down to is a color matching game, right? So your opponent will play a card, and that card has two colors. It might be red and green, where red is for strength and green is for dexterity. So then it's up to you to play a card that matches at least one of those colors. So you always will have two options, so that's some flexibility, but as you know, that cuts out your other stats, so you wouldn't necessarily be able to use a charisma or intelligence card, at least not effectively. So that's something I guess you have to prepare for as a player, is you don't want to necessarily have all intelligence and nothing else to work with. But the other caveat is each enemy you go up against, they have their own deck, right? And each deck is unique. There's five cards to an enemy deck. There's always one really powerful card and one weak card and then three in-between cards. In a combat, you only ever see three of those five cards. So that kind of makes it interesting. If you play with them again, you might see some different abilities they have. But the thing is usually each enemy specializes in something. So maybe an enemy is like has a lot of intelligence-based cards, or an enemy has a lot of strength-based cards. And so that's also something you can kind of learn and be familiar with. You're like, ooh, maybe I kind of want to stay away from this guy because I'm just not really strong in that area, or that's just a big gamble for me. So that's something to think about as well. But you always have the dice roll, right? So even if your strength is really low, maybe you're really lucky with that dice as well.
It sounds like with the color match in particular, you try to keep matches dynamic, that even if you were particularly good in one area and particularly bad in another, you might have some advantage to pursue through those colors.
Yeah, some advantage and some disadvantages.
Right. What would you say is the role of dice in combat? How would the game be different if you just took out all the dice rolls?
I think it would be a lot less exciting. I mean, there's just so many times where, especially, you can see it when people are playing the physical version. They're just like, oh, come on, baby. Just don't roll a one, and I'm good to go. And then there's that moment when the dice is rolling, and then, it's teetering on that two or one, and everyone's kind of anxious. Or they have to roll a six, right, to kind of beat this guy with this card that they're playing. and that happens, and that's just, like, super exciting moments.
That's a good feeling.
Kind of play with. Yeah, it really is. It really kind of keeps things going. And, it's not always constantly like you need a high dice roll. It's also about those cards you're playing. If you're matching your high stats with the cards you're playing, then you're mostly good to go. But every now and then, your opponent's going to throw a card at you where you're going to have to test a low skill, and then you're going to have to hope the dice gods are with you, I guess.
I also do rather like that dice roll animation.
Oh, thanks. That one took me around 13 hours to draw. I can draw every frame.
Wow.
it was a little painful.
And a player can also accumulate health and armor. And what does armor add to the strategy of the game that isn't present with just health?
I guess first and foremost, the whole idea behind the armor was that it's not just an extension of your health, but it also helps to mitigate damage. So the first point of damage you take from any source is always mitigated by one, as long as you have some sort of defense or armor value. Once that's gone, then you kind of lose that mitigation. But then also where it kind of helps to mix up strategies is certain cards can do things with defense or even ignore defense as well. So you might have
a card that does damage based on how much defense you have, for example. So you can have someone that's like very defense-driven and able to use that defense, and someone that helps them out and things like that. And then again, sometimes you could also have cards that completely ignore defense as well, if it's like piercing abilities, or you can have abilities that just wipe out defense no matter how much defense they have as well. So there's different types of, strategy paths you could go down.
It sounds like armor has a twofold purpose, where on the one hand, it gives some extra room for failure before you actually start to punish the player for taking damage. And on the other hand, it opens up more strategies in that you might have, you know, you'll have to pick, oh, do I want something piercing or do I want something blunt, and, you know, which one would work with my playstyle better.
Right, yeah, because if you played a piercing card, that's great. You might do damage to them, but then their armor's still going to be there. So if you had more cards to play, you wouldn't have whittled down their armor. So you just have to make decisions based on other cards you might have in your deck as well.
Okay. It struck me that when you're in combat, your enemy will always play their card first, and then you get to choose which of your three cards would be best to counter it. What influence does this level of knowledge have on the strategy that wouldn't be there in a double-blind setup where you had to both play your card at the same time?
Yeah, I guess the intention there was to place some limitations on the player. So I guess the lore behind it is the opponent plays a card, and that's the situation that they're placing you in. So they're placing you in a situation where your strength is tested, or they're placing you in a situation where your dexterity is tested, right? And so you have to deal with that by playing a card that kind of plays along with that trait. And the idea there, again, would be that it's limiting. So they couldn't always just play their highest damage card, their highest defense card. They would have to be limited by the stats that are being tested there in order to be the most effective across the board.
Okay. So it's almost like the game, by taking that first step, is inviting the player to interact with it. You know, if the enemy plays a card that has strength and charisma attached to it, that invites the player to look over their cards, consider their options, and form their turn based on that, rather than just having to figure something out on their own.
Right, yeah. And they could play a card that didn't match a color or stat, but if they were to win the dice roll, they wouldn't get to trigger some special ability on their card. They would just keep their opponent from triggering it. And so sometimes that's a good decision if you just really need defense, right, and you don't have a card that would match and give you defense. And so sometimes you have to, like, make that decision to sort of throw away a card in order to make the longer play, I guess, make sense.
Right. Would you say this means the player has perfect information, or do you think it's more complicated than that?
You definitely have a lot of information, I guess. The thing that's kind of up for grabs is you don't necessarily know what card they're going to play next and what card you're going to get next. And each time you play a card, you're going to lose your hand. You're going to get a whole new hand, right? And so if you don't go and play a health card now that you think you need, or defense card now, you may not have a health or defense card later. So while you do have enough information about, like, what's the best decision I can make right now, it might be hard to guess what's the best decision over the next few playthroughs, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that you know an awful lot about this individual turn, but as a result of being a card game, you can't determine what your options will be next turn or what your enemy's options will be next turn.
Right. And you know what's in your deck, so if you throw away your one strength card now, but you also have a dex card you could play, it might make sense to do that, but that's only if the opponent happens to also eventually play a card that you can use that strength or dex card on eventually. So there's definitely a couple gambles you take a little bit. So it's sort of like playing the odds. And of course, knowing what your opponent's deck looks like definitely gives you a better chance of playing those odds. But as I mentioned before, he's only going to play three of his five skills, so it's not the exact same every time.
Right. So you might even, when you're constructing a deck, take that gamble of, you know, this doesn't counter this one enemy's card particularly well, but maybe on this go of the fight he won't even have that card.
Right, yeah.
All right. And last but not least, I wanted to ask, when it comes to game design, which is most important? The game itself, the intention of the developer, or the experience of the player?
I would say it's definitely going to go with the last one, the experience of the player. The intention of the developer, I think, honestly, unfortunately, doesn't mean squat. I could say, well, I wanted it to kind of work this way, or I wanted you to understand this or that, but that's kind of, you know, the worst way to do it. It's all about just watching them play, seeing what they experience, and just trying to react to that and take notes about that. You know, if you see they're getting excited, or they're anticipating the dice roll, or you see them cheer or curse under their breath, then I think you know you're doing something. You know something is working out right. So, yep, definitely the last one there.
So it sounds like your underlying goal there is to create a compelling experience.
Yeah, I think that's really for any game, is to create a compelling experience. And it all depends who your audience is as to what that compelling experience means to them, or what kind of compelling experience they're looking for, right? So Heroes Guard definitely is niche. It's not for everybody because it's so reading and story intensive. And the card game is like a short little mini game almost. So it is all about like the audience and what the players are looking for, what they want.
Right. I'm used to RPGs where you can just mash A and scroll through all the text and just move on to the combat. Thank you for joining me. And is there anything you would like to add? Any websites you'd like to share?
Sure. Heroes Guard the Journal is available on iOS and Google Play now for phones and tablets. And you can find more information at my website under bytestudios.com. And byte is BYTE. Yeah, Heroes Guard the Journal. Check it out and let me know what kind of stories you'd want added in the future.
Nice. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Greg.